ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिपोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी दशयादिनिवर्तन्ते निराहारस्य देहिनः रसवर्जं रसोऽप्यस्य परं दृष्ट्वा निवर्तते विषयाः विनिवर्तन्ते निराहारस्य देहिनः रसवर्जं रसः अपि अस्य परं दृष्ट्वा निवर्तते Okay, in the previous verse, a doubt can come up. In the previous verse it says, a person is said to be firm in their knowledge, the jnana pratishtha, firm in their knowledge, when the indriyas, when the sense organs can be pulled back from the sense objects at will. Just like a tortoise can pull in their limbs and their head at will. If there's any fear, or there's any disturbance, they can just pull in immediately without any problem. But what about the rasa? For a human being, it's possible for a person to, for instance, fast in reference to food. You can fast for days. Using your will, right? Day after day, some people fast for 5 days, 10 days, 15 days, 20 days, you know. Or you can remove yourself from sense objects. Also, you could go to the mountains. You could practice tapas, all various forms of tapas to remove yourself, to remove your senses from sense objects. Okay, so here in this verse. This is what the Lord is talking about here, what Krishna is talking about. He says, the vishayaha, which we'll take initially, we're going to read this in two ways. The vishayas, just take for now, sense objects. Vini varatante. The vishayas, the sense objects themselves, can recede into the background. We'll take this in another way as sense organs. But vishaya, normally, in its primary meaning, means sense objects. So initially, we'll take it that way. The vishayas, the sense objects, they can recede, right? For a dehi, for somebody who's embodied, an embodied person, a jiva, who is fasting. Fasting means that they have removed themselves, right? They have, by through will, they have decided, they have made a decision they've made a decision to not go after the sense object. And by will, they are able to not do that, and if that is so, the sense objects will recede, or their sense organs, we take it as sense organs, the vishayas, the sense organs, taking it as upalakshana, where the sense objects refer to the sense organs, so those sense organs are brought back, away from the vishayas, from the objects. Or you can say, by controlling, through the control of my sense organs, right, the vishayas go into the background. That's one way of looking at it. So, for a person who, through fasting, through removing themselves, through discipline, removing themselves from the vishayas, right, then what happens? They will go away. They'll recede into the background, or the sense organs will be held internally in check. That's true. Anybody can do it, in fact. And Shankara says, even a fool, even a morpha can do this. Anybody can practice, in fact, severe tapas in order to bring that about where you're actually depriving yourself of contact with sense objects. So anybody can do that, right? But then they will the vishayas, the sense object, will recede. Everything will recede. The sense organs will be brought back. All except for one thing. The rasa. Rasa varajam. Varajam, at the end of a compound, means except for. Except for the rasa. Rasa means the raga, the like or the dislike for that object, right? In other words, you can pull your sense organs in, or you can even, and the Bhagavad Gita talks about this later also, you can even move away from the objects that you like. In other words, you could move to the mountains, you could go to the Himalayas, you could leave everything and live under a tree, so that you're physically removed from all of these sense objects, right? Or you can practice tapas, where you're withdrawing the sense organs themselves. The objects are all there, but you're withdrawing the sense organs. Or you can physically leave and get away from them. That can be done. But how to get rid of the rasa? How to get rid of the desire? How to get rid of the need, the want, that if only I could have this, then I would be happy. So physically you can accomplish all of this, but the rasa won't go. So now he says, so everything except for the rasa, rasa varajam, okay? You can do all of it, you can't get rid of the rasa. Rasaha api, but the rasa also goes. Asya param drishtva nivartate, rasaha api nivartate, okay? The rasa also goes. Who, for who? Param drishtva. Asya param drishtva, for having seen means having known. Drishtva is indeclinable past participle. Param drishtva, having known. Drish is used in the sense of seen means to know. Means to have approach a direct immediate knowledge as opposed to intellectual knowledge. Having recognized, having understood, having seen clearly. The param. Param means Brahman. The Atma in terms of I am the whole. So here, having seen the param, the Atma, which is Brahman, having understood that, then the rasa also goes. So now Shankara says, what does that mean to... what does that mean, having seen? So he says, for the one who has their senses under control, for that person, that yeti, right, having seen param, drishtva param, paramartha tattvam, Brahma, drishtva, having seen Brahman, which is the absolute truth, paramartha tattvam, drishtva upalabhya, having known, having understood. How is that understood? Aham eva tat, as I am that. Having understood, I am that. To be understand that I am Brahman means to know, to recognize that I am Brahman. Why does it remove the rasa? Why does the understanding, I am Brahman, remove the rasa? And without understanding it, the rasa is not removed. Okay? So that's the question. That's what needs to be seen. So the basic verse is, in this section itself, a person has to have control of their senses. Right? Because even when a person, say a mumukshu, is exposed to this knowledge, if the senses are taking you for a wild ride, your mind's not available, right? And so you need to have control of your senses. But control of the senses is not enough. There's no resolution there. It's like holding your breath. You know? Let me control my senses, even though I'm not happy, let me control my senses. Let me control my senses, because maybe I will become happy if I control my senses. Right? So that's just faith. I'm practicing controlling the my senses, without any resolution into the reason that my senses carry me away. The reason your senses carry you away, you know, the senses are backed by your mind, they carry you away because you're seeking to become whole. Right? That's the only reason. If you watch how your mind works, how your mind takes you for one ride after another, if you really follow where the mind is going, what is the mind seeking as it takes you on this ride? It's seeking your happiness. Right? It's seeking your happiness. If I could only have it this way and take care of this and take care of this thing, then I could relax, I would be free, I would be whole, I would be happy. And so that's what that's the ride. That's the, as we'll see later, it's as though a ship lost at sea, being blown wherever the wind, in whatever direction the wind goes, the ship is taken in that direction. Our mind is like that. In whatever direction our desire goes, right? Wherever the desire goes means wherever the senses are going. The mind is following the senses. The senses actually are following the mind. It seems like the mind is following the senses, but the senses are actually following the mind. The mind sets the target. The target is, I need this in order to be happy. That's the target. But that target is something that has been developed. The mind lands on something, the mind likes that, it perseverates on that object, and then a desire is created. Just watch your own mind. But the point here is not that. We'll get into that later, because Krishna goes into a real unfoldment about what actually happens to the psyche as it starts, you know, focusing on an object. What are the process? What the mind focuses on an object, and then focusing on it, a like forms, and the like forms, a desire to have it forms, and the desire for it forms. Then anger comes when anything tries to obstruct that, and so the mind gets lost in a whole network of anxiety and pain around these objects of desire. But what starts it is the search for ananda. And so what is going to resolve that search, that rasa, right? What is going to resolve the rasa? It's not going to be withdrawing the sense organs. Because just withdrawing the sense organs doesn't solve the problem of my ananda. It's a problem of my ananda. What I mean by that is, it's not all right for me to be unhappy with my withdrawn sense organs. You know? I have to be happy. And whatever happy means, I have to feel happy. Mm. It's not enough even to say, because of being exposed to this teaching, I know that I'm happy. Because the teacher tells me, the Shastra tells me, I understand it logically. I have an intellectual understanding that I am all ananda. And I have that intellectual understanding. And so that's great. That's not great. It's not enough. Because then the next question is, I know that, then why am I not happy? I know that it's true. Then why am I not happy? Right? So it obviously that's not enough.
Free.
I know, I'm so free, I'm so whole, I'm so complete. But I am
but
so happy.
The bars are still there.
The bars are still there, exactly. And so this is what has to be resolved. What resolves it? The resolution comes in the recognition, I am Brahman. Again, the recognition, I am Brahman, or I am the whole. My being is the whole. That recognition, again, is not an intellectual recognition. It's not, this I is the whole that somebody is telling me about. That's an indirect recognition. That's the recognition of relief. There is a relief in it. It's like the tenth man story. When the tenth man is in so much distress over the possibility that the tenth man has been lost in the river, there's so much distress. And when the old man comes and says, don't worry, the tenth man is, and I'll show him to you. That's a relief. And if they have shraddha on that tenth man, this is the important element of the tenth man story. If there's shraddha in that old man, he seems to be wise and sane, and he says, with all confidence, the tenth man is, he's not drowned in the river, I'll show him to you. That's a relief. Now immediately, the tenth man says, oh, thank God. Thank God. I'm so relieved. Now all the what we call expectancy is there. Thank God. I'm so relieved.
Where is he?
Where is he? Right? Where is he? But that's what they call akanksha. Those words, the tenth man is, now it's indirect knowledge, lead the expectancy okay, let me see him. That's the fulfillment. So when you say, the teaching says, I am Brahman, it teaches I am Brahman, you understand, yes, that must be true. I see it, it's true for sure. Now show me. That's the drishtwa. It has to be seen, the aparoksha, the recognition of the truth of it. And when we say seen, not seen as an object, that's the problem, and Shankara gets into this. It's not having seen the param, having seen Brahman, oh, look at Brahman over there, thank goodness, there he is. No. Because aham Brahman, aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. And so I cannot see myself as Brahman as though an object away from me. So aham Brahmasmi means that this being, the conscious, awareful being, the me that I am, I need to recognize the wholeness, the completeness of my being. That's what needs to occur. When I recognize, so when I recognize that the ananda that I've been seeking through this object or this object or this object is the self of all objects. That's the thing. The ananda, the wholeness, the well-being that I've been seeking through this object or this object or this object or this object and then this object. Okay? That the ananda that I'm seeking is only my own being. There is no ananda outside of the conscious being that I am. It doesn't exist. There's no object ananda out here. That the ananda, the only ananda that I've ever enjoyed from the fulfillment of a desire is the ananda which is my own being. And that this being that I am is the being of all objects. It's not just that this being that I am, right, is the ananda that I seek, but that this ananda that I seek is the self of every cognition. It is the self of every object. When we were doing the mundaka last time, that's what, why it was so important about this verse for the wise person. If I think of a loka, loka means a world of experience. I am there, I am that. If I think of an object of desire, I am there, I am that. Because there is no object of desire, there is no object in the world which I am not. I am the being of every object. I'm the being of this body, I'm the being of these sense organs, I'm the being of the mind, I'm the being of the perception, I'm the being of the sound, I'm the being of whatever cognition is there. The word Vishwam, which is a word for the universe, now this is the Vishwa. This entire universe is the Vishwa. The Vishwa, the word Vishwa means vivida, jnanate, something like that. What it stands for is jnayate, I think. What it stands for is every cognition. I am the Atma, I am the being of every cognition. This is the thing to be understood. If once I recognize that I am the self, I am the conscious being of every cognition, of every object, then whatever object I think of, I am. There's nothing that can separate me from any experience. That's why what we were focusing on in the meditation today. When you allow yourself just to relax, I'm going to take this meditation just a step further so we can, I want to kind of get into an experiential understanding of what it means to, when you say, I am the whole. Because that's really how this verse is going to resolve. If you start, like in the meditation for this class, if you just allow yourself to totally relax so that your mind is not trying to reject any experience. That's the first step. You just allow all experience to be there. What you will notice if you're just alert to the experiences that you're having, that no experience that you're having is away from your being. You're the constant there. That's how it is. It doesn't matter if it's a good experience, a bad experience, agitation, sorrow, happiness, joy, perception, sound. It makes no difference. None of those experiences are away from you, and you are pervasive to all of them. And your being is there, not changing. So that should be something where you can say, I'm not changing. These experiences are all changing, all coming and going. And even the experiences of my body, it doesn't make any difference what they are, but they are manifold and they're all changing. I'm not, and none of them are away from me. Okay? Now, so that is your experience. That's your experience at this moment, in fact. You know, so if you just wake up for the minute to that reality, wake up means become conscious of that. That is the fact that even at this moment, looking out through your eyes, that your being is the constant. The awareful being that you are is the constant in this experience. Okay, now, there's something else that you need to notice. There's nothing in your experience that can change that constant. In other words, you can't make the awareness or the sense of me, the constant being that's there, modify. All of the perceptions will be modifying. But the constancy of being itself will not. Nor can you look at it as an object. You can't say, oh, look, I am constant being. Let me look at that as an object. You can't look at it as an object. It is its own light. Your own presence doesn't have anyone behind it lighting it up. It is its own light. That's what we mean by Svatta Siddha. It's you are self-evident. There's not somebody else behind you lighting you up. And you are the self-evident being that is there no matter what the vritti is. That vritti is full of you. It's full of your being. But the viveka is the recognition that the being which the vritti with the thought modification enjoys is constant. It's the invariable. It's invariable because it's not an object that has name and form. It's the invariable in name and form. It's the being in name and form. It's not an object, right, which enjoys. Consciousness is not an object which enjoys consciousness. It's the self of all objects. It's the being of all objects. And that is your experience. Now, what's important to recognize is here in this room right now, say when this meditation is going on, or if you become alert to that reality right now, the consciousness that is pervasive to all of your experience, your vritti, your vritti, your vritti, your vritti, your vritti, your vritti, right? That self, which is pervasive to all the vrittis, is changeless and not an object. It's changeless in reference to your vritti. It's changeless in reference to my vritti. It's not an object to me. It's not an object to you. Right? For all of us here in this room, the being that is pervasive to the vritti, to all experience, whether it be an experience outside, like a sound, or it be a thought in the mind, the consciousness which is pervasive to that is not an object and is never changing. Okay? It's not an object, it's never changing. All of these experiences are coming and going. Coming into being and going out of being. Is that clear for everybody? The self of it is not. The self of it is not coming into being and going out of being. Clear? But now, this is so critical. If the self, the very stuff of your experience is not coming into being and going out of being, it cannot be touched or harmed by the experience. Because all the experiences that you're having, I'm having, all beings are having, and all of those experiences are coming and going without any variance in yourself. Right? And that means that they have nothing to do with me in terms of owning me, changing me, modifying me, containing me, because they all come and go and I don't. I am their very self, but they have no ability to touch me. Which is why if you just are kind of, it's a good meditation to walk around and just recognize as you're walking around that your being is not walking around. You are not walking around. Right? You're always the same. What's called in the dhruva. Dhruva means there's no motion. You know, like an ansa in their kutashta, it's like, sometimes it's likened to you like an anvil, because no motion. You know? And that being that was you that is not walking around, which absolutely no experience is away from or other than, that's true for you, for you, for you, for you, for you, for you, for all beings. And so, whose being is it? Whose being is the self? It is my being, but who am I? It is my being, it is me, but who am I? I am Brahman. I am the whole. I am the self that is you, and is you, and is me. I'm not just the self that is me, I'm the self that is the subject and the object. I am the self that is the whole. And it is this self that is the whole, right, that all beings seek. Right? And so when my mind recognizes I am the whole, what is the recognition? It is really my being is the self of all beings. It's not that my being, it's not just that my being is Ananda. It's that my being is Ananta. My being is limitless in this sense. Limitless means, what does limitless mean? Limitless, when we say Ananta without end, it means there is nothing that is not me. There is none of these beings here in this universe, the whole prapancha, is any more or less me. It's like saying, this wave is a little bit more water than this wave. I think this wave is just has more quality of water in it. Right? It's not true. There is no more or less. There only is. There's not more or less, better or worse, bigger or smaller, happier or sadder. There's no variation in terms of the being that you are. And that being that you are is Ananta. It is what is. Right? It is the whole. It is the whole. And so, what is the nature of the self which is limitless? The nature of the self which is limitless, of your being which is limitless, is different in a sense than all of the namas, all of the moods, all of the emotions, all of the perceptions, the vast array of manifest knowledge. There's a vast array of cognition, a vast, vast, infinite array of manifest knowledge. That manifest knowledge is multidimensional with feelings. The manifest knowledge is full of feelings and emotions and perceptions. Right? All of your sense organs, not just for you, for all beings. Right? It's full of feelings and emotions and perceptions and the kinesthetic sense, the sense of touch. All of these things are manifest knowledge. And this manifest knowledge is something which is continually changing in form. That's what we call the prapancha. This body, mind, sense organs for all beings are part of the prapancha. They're part of the vishwa. They're part of the creation. They're part of manifest knowledge. And they're all part of an order. But this order of manifest knowledge is something that is continually modifying, continually changing. But itself is not changing. The manifest order of the creation, continually, every aspect, all emotions, all feelings, all names, all forms, birth and death, continually changing. Changing in the changeless. So that's the viveka. I need to recognize the stability of being, which is the changeless amidst the changing. The changeless is the self of the changing. What is the changeless is me. I am the self of the changing. And so this is the recognition where I recognize I am the whole. And what is the nature of itself? Is the self, is the whole, is the conscious being that you are desirable or not? Is consciousness, conscious being, the conscious me, desirable or not? I would say there's nothing more desirable than myself. Nothing I care more about than myself. Nothing I love more than myself. Nothing I want to protect more than myself. The problem is that self gets superimposed on objects, on the body, on the mind, on the ahankar. But in fact, it's that self which I always seek. So when the mind is relaxed, right? When the mind is relaxed and not caught up in the samsara, you're wanting this object as opposed to this object or as opposed to this object, right? It feels whole and complete because it's not creating a painful emotion for itself. So simple. The mind creates painful emotions for itself because of self-ignorance, which causes me to look out into the creation and say, I need this to be happy, and then I'm on my way. And because I don't have control over the creation, I can't always get what I want, and so the mind struggles to get what I want, to keep what I want, to protect what I want, to worry about what I want in the future that I may not get. You know, creates an endless array of situations and mental states which are painful. And so for the jnani, those mental states don't occur. Those mental states don't have to occur. The reason those mental states occur is because of samsara. It's because I have decided, I believe that this object will make me happy. Okay, so a mumukshu comes to this knowledge. And the mind has spent lifetimes suffering from this self-ignorance and the mental states that it creates. Yeah. Right? And so initially, as the student is being exposed to this teaching, right? As the student is being exposed to the teaching, for a while you rein in your mind with viveka. And reminding yourself, you know, and holding the mind so the mind just doesn't run off in this way and that way, so you rein it back in with some viveka and some understanding. But even there, for a mumukshu, you rein it in because you know, you have a reason for reining it in. Because you know where the source of ananda is, the mind habitually is going out. But it's not like the murkha, it's not like the fool who's just reining the mind in, hoping that something good will happen. You know? You're reining the mind in because you know what the source of ananda is. So that's initial. That's what a student will initially do. They'll use some discipline, and they'll use some discipline to sit with the self, to recognize, to sit with yourself, like in the meditation that we did, to recognize what is my swarupa, what is my nature. What am I really like? What is this being like? Is this being desirable? Is the one that I am the source of Ananda? Is that true? Is there anything away from me? To make this your being a proksha, to bring it into the forefront, to give yourself some time to bring it into the forefront. This is what Krishna will say in the next verse. And it's that process down these next few verses he'll go into explaining how to do this, how to just sit and contemplate on my own nature as I am the whole, that there is nothing away from me. It's in that contemplation, that owning up of this knowledge, is what takes away the rasa. And it takes away the rasa by fulfilling it, not by denying it, by fulfilling it. Because what is the rasa is the ananda. I am seeking ananda. That's what takes the mind away. The problem is that the ananda isn't out there. The objects are out there, the ananda isn't out there. And so here, having recognized I am the whole, I also recognize the source of the ananda. And so it's not deprivation, it's fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And so it's that fulfillment that removes the rasa. Mm-hmm. Nothing but the fulfillment of that will remove the rasa. Because otherwise you'd have to be able to say, you know, it's fine with me not to be happy. That's all right. It's not all right. It's because that's the equivalent of saying, it's fine for me not to be me. It's fine for me to be removed from myself. It's fine for me not to be my own nature. It's like asking a fish, and they use this example. If you take a fish out of water, right, it's not fine for the fish. Right? All it wants is to get back to the water. All it wants is that. And all I want is to enjoy the fullness of my being. And as a samsari, I can only get glimpses of that by creating situations that will allow my mind to relax for a moment so the mind can reflect on Ananda and I can have a little reprieve. That's what every samsari does. Samsari, I don't mean that derogatively. I mean somebody who doesn't have knowledge is a samsari. So every single thing I do, whether it's the performance of dharma, of giving charities, of helping others, or of buying and expending money and buying objects or whatever, all of it is for the experience of ananda. And why do I want the experience of ananda? Because I feel whole. I feel complete. That's when I'm myself. I'm most myself. You know? And so that quest has to be fulfilled. And when that quest is fulfilled, then the rasa will go. The desire will go. So that desire is not going to go by remaining, controlling the sense organs and remaining ignorant. That is like holding your breath. In fact, I read Swamiji's Bhasha on this. He said, eventually, you're going to blow. Right? What he means by that is, I want this, but no, I'm going to control my mind. I'm going to control my mind. I'm going to control myself. I'm not going to go after that. I'm not going to go after it. Finally, the lid blows off. The lid blows off and you go. You know, it's very interesting how that is. It's important to understand that. Yeah. It's suppression, you know. It's really, you're suppressing something. There's no knowledge in that. This isn't about suppression. This is about resolution. This is about fulfillment, about the mind discovering the source of ananda, where the happiness that it seeks is myself. And then from there, it's recognized, it's the happiness that myself, that I seek is myself, and myself is all beings. There is nothing that is other than that. And so that, with that understanding, I can relax into the universe. That's why understanding of Ishvara is so important. If you don't understand, if Ishvara is denied or thrown out, which that some people will do, not because they have a God phobia. They don't want there to be any God. But you know what is happening when you're discarding what the Upanishads say is Ishvara? You're discarding yourself. If we look at this knowledge, this creation as manifest knowledge, as if you say manifest knowledge, right? Like, what is manifest knowledge for you? If I say they have a thought of a meadow, that's manifest knowledge. If I say have a thought of a pot, a flower, your home, that's all manifest knowledge. It's all sitting there unmanifest, and I say, think of a pansy, think of a rose. Because manifest. That manifest knowledge is you. You're the very being, the self of that knowledge. See that? If I ask you to think of a rose, the rose is now manifest. You have now manifested a rose. You're not the rose in the sense that when you withdraw the rose, you're still there. You're there before, during, and after the rose, but you've manifested the rose without yourself changing at all. Right? Now think of this whole universe. When we think of Ishvara, this whole universe is looked upon as manifest knowledge. That's what it is, manifest knowledge. Why would it not be manifest knowledge? There's nothing here that is not consciousness. And so if there's nothing here that is not conscious being, which we can just prove by dissecting the world, okay? There's nothing here but conscious being. Then what is this? What name do we have for this? Manifest knowledge. Why do we say manifest knowledge? Because there's nothing here but consciousness. So we have consciousness plus name and form. Right? Consciousness plus name and form is what? It's manifest knowledge. What else is it? There's nothing here but consciousness. If you say it's not consciousness, then this creation is inert. It's not consciousness, then you have consciousness and something else, which is not consciousness. Then you show me what this something else is. You can't find anything here. There's no way to establish something else here. There is no object in this creation that you can find. So the more you dissect this creation, the more you find there's nothing here. That's what's Maya. And so there is nothing here but consciousness. And this one consciousness, this one indivisible consciousness, is the content, is the being of this entire creation. So that's why we call this creation manifest knowledge, because it's nothing but consciousness. And consciousness is not inert. Right? And so now you can see what that what is the relationship between manifest knowledge and consciousness? Well, what is the relationship between you and the little bit of manifest knowledge you have? What is that relationship?
Me.
Between you and a thought. You are the Ishvara of the thought. Right? You are the being of the thought. How is this creation different? The only reason you have any idea of difference is because of the Dehatma Buddhi. That's what makes it different. Otherwise, there is no difference, because consciousness has no limits. Consciousness, a conscious being is not contained as an object within the creation. Right? So the conscious being that you are is not a contained object in the creation. It's the self of everything in the creation. Whose self is it? Yourself. It is you. So is the you, which is the self of the whole, less than, more inert than, you that is the self of the jiva? The self that I am is yourself. The self that I am is yourself. The self that I am is the self of the whole. Right? If I am the self of the whole, how can I as the self of the whole be less than I am as the self of a part of the whole? And even for myself as a part of the whole, as this jiva here, if I analyze my experience as a jiva here, within this creation, within my little realm of the creation, right? This body, mind, sense organs, all of the moods, the emotions, the perceptions, are part of this whole, right? If you think of it as you're sitting there, and you're looking at out through your sense organs at this little part of the creation that is your domain, okay? So if you just relax, now let's see. Everything external to your body is part of this domain. It's part of the whole, your whole, the whole of your experience. The body is also part of the whole of your experience. The sense organs are also part of the whole of your, because you're aware of them. The mind, the thoughts, the moods, the emotions are also part of this fabric of your experience, because you're aware of all of them. So even from the standpoint of the jiva, in terms of your experience of what is known, the jiva belongs to the whole of your domain here. If that is so, then let that domain extend to the entire creation. Because why would it? Why wouldn't it? When the Shastra unfolds Ishvara, the Aham Brahmasmi Tatvamasi, that thou art, you are the whole, you are Ishvara, what it is making you recognize that this whole manifest creation, right, this whole manifest creation is the manifest knowledge of your being. That's what it is. And when you say the manifest knowledge of your being, right, the conscious being that you are, then that's what we mean, that is what Ishvara meant. So, but what Ishvara means, so it's very important in Vedanta for Western students who come to Vedanta to understand, when we just use the word God, it's immediately the Christian or Judeo-Christian concept of God as some man in heaven who's controlling things. The understanding of this infinite creation as manifest knowledge that has an infinite order, of which this body, mind, sense organs is a part. It has for its very substance, the very self, what it is consciousness. And all that is here is Ishvara. That's all that is here. You could say all that is here is Brahman. Say all that is here is Ishvara. Ishvara is Brahman. Right? And so this body, mind, sense organs is part of that. And so I recognize this creation, which is Ishvara, as my greater self. Right? Manifest knowledge of which this body, mind, sense organs, ego, everything is a part. This body, mind, sense organs belongs to this manifest knowledge, to this whole. Mm-hmm. And it's a part and parcel. The order of the whole includes every part of duality, every single part of duality on every level. And so I can relax into that order. This is what Swamiji is putting very much emphasis on this in his guided meditations. You relax into the recognition of the order that is holding your experience. For instance, if your mind is upset or hurt, you're having a negative emotion that's causing you pain, you allow yourself to see that pain or that situation in the order of the creation. In other words, you see what caused it, what brought it about, what the desires were, what the needs were, what this person did, what that person did that caused this reaction. You see it as part of the order, just like if I drop a glass onto the ground and it shatters. Well, first of all, there's a law of gravity. And so if I let go of the glass, it's not going to float there in space. It will drop. And chances are great, because of the fragility of the glass, that it will shatter. Why? Because of the laws, because of the order. And now if I was really attached to the glass, because of my attachment to that glass, I might feel sorrow because it broke. And then I might feel irritated because I don't want to clean up the mess. There's all kinds of things that are going to be generated by that. And so in meditation, if I can see all of it as part of Ishvara and see the intricacies of the order, that's what we call objectification. That objectifying, you know, then frees my being to pervade that order. That order takes place in me. And I am the self of the whole order, not just the self of one part of it. So it's a very beautiful meditation to do that, because it allows you to put the entire jiva and all of the experiences of the jiva into Ishvara's order, and then recognizing my being as being part of that. But even in the meditation that we were just doing for this class, when you relax and you recognize that the sounds that you hear and the thoughts that you feel and the sensations of the body and the breathing of your neighbor, all of the slight wind on your skin, every single level of perception is totally pervaded from and not away from in any way the invariable constancy of your being. And so that's the recognition that the mind has to discover and dwell in. Mm-hmm. Through practice, because the mind is so used to being taken away. So until it can't be taken away anymore, it is always brought back to seeing the truth of that. Until it doesn't need to be brought back. Because actually, even if it's out there, you're still the self of that. If it's upset over here, you're still the self of that. But the mind needs to recognize it. Okay. Let's stop there.
Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.